We might be in the final quarter of the football season, but that doesn't mean winning season is over. Oh, no. With MyBookie and its cash-out system, you are in control of how you bet and how you win for the rest of the season. Season win totals, parlays, points totals. If you're on the right side, you can get out while the getting is good. Cash out. Use the funds on other bets. Or just let it ride for the chance at a bigger payday. Any way you slice it, you are in control. To get started, go to mybookie.ag now. That's mybookie.ag. Register for an account for free. When you're ready, make your first deposit. And remember to use promo code ZABE. That's Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. And grab a welcome bonus on the house. That's promo code ZABE to claim your deposit bonus. The season is running out, but winning season has just begun. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere at mybookie.ag.
Hey, you know that feeling when your mind won't shut off at night? Or the stress just keeps piling and piling up? What if I told you there might be a solution that you should check out? How about the folks at CBDFX? They recently sent me some samples. I know all about the CBD phenomenon these days, and I'm curious but a little bit skeptical. Well, I've been trying them out to find out what works best for me. There's a whole range of products, gummies, capsules, topicals, you name it. I've been testing their CBD and CBD night capsules. They're built to get you asleep fast and keep you asleep all night. CBN is what they call the ultimate relaxation cannabinoid and is packed with other natural sleep support. They also make these original mixed berries CBD gummies that have won 4 Healthline Best CBD Gummy Awards, and they're gentle. And they have calming effects. They're great for overall wellness, and they actually taste good. Natural berry flavor. CBDFX has been doing this since 2014, so they've got it down. Everything is USA made with organic hemp, no GMOs, no pesticides, no harmful chemicals, all verified by third-party lab testing. Whether you want calm, focus, better sleep, or just an overall wellness boost, CBDFX has something for you. Right now, my listeners get 40% off your first order with code ZABE at CBDFX. That's code ZABE, Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo at CBDFX.com. 40% off using my promo code. Feel the difference with CBDFX. Have you heard of Gold Belly? It's an amazing site where you can get the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants all across the U.S. And it's perfect for game day, Valentine's Day, big parties, events, you name it. Gold Belly will ship you iconic Chicago deep dish pizza from Lou Malnati's, the original Buffalo Wings from Anchor Bar in Buffalo, Guy Fieri's unbelievable trash can nachos, real Philly cheesesteaks, or even the legendary Franklin's barbecue straight from Texas right to your door. And with Valentine's Day coming up, they've got great gifts like award-winning dinners from Peter Luger Steakhouse, world-famous macaroons from La Durie, and even the exact cake served at JFK's wedding to Jackie O. I can't wait to order some Lou Malnati's. Getting authentic Chicago deep dish shipped right to my door? Incredible. So whether you're looking to turn game day into an unforgettable experience with friends or want to impress the loved one on Valentine's Day, go to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code ZABE. That's goldbelly.com, code ZABE. Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo for 20% off your first order.
But this stuff here, I just gave you what we could do. I'm going to give you one other. What's the percentage of kids that make the NBA? Unless you play for me, what would be the percentage? Like, it's like 1% or less? That means 99% of the college players that are getting money, it's fugazi. Fugazi. Because they're getting 400, 500, 800, a million, and they're not pros.
Today on the ZABEcast, John Calipari delivers a Sermon on the Mount. The NFL's headed for an NFC South quagmire on Sunday, and I've got 15 seconds to grab your attention or you're out. You press play, so buckle up and let's go.
Here we go.
Wednesday, December 31st, 2025. Welcome to the end of the year. At least here on the ZABEcast, just you and I today. May not be a super long ZABEcast, but it will be good. Good to close out the year with a little solo shot of El Baldo. Thank you, everyone who listened and downloaded and spread the word and the gospel about this podcast in an ocean of podcasts where everybody has a podcast. Oh, you have a podcast, huh? Hey, how about that? The difference is this one's been going on for 7 years plus. It continues to grow in ways and size that I never imagined. And the caliber of people that I'm meeting through this vehicle is truly incredible. Impressive people that I sit there and go, damn, you listen to my lunatic ravings and rantings? Wow, I appreciate that. Makes me feel good. So looking forward to another banner year in 2026 and beyond, as I've now been freed up with some time to really lean into and expand and do more stuff with the Zabecast in the coming year. Let's get to the biggest story going right now, which is going to continue well into the new year and then beyond, and that is the crumbling state of college sports, especially college basketball and football. Obviously, college football, we've already been through the Sturm und Drang, as it were. That's a fancy word, by the way. I'm going to look this one up here for you. Sturm und Drang definition. I'm going to do a little word thing here for you. Late 18th century German literary and artistic movement that rejected Enlightenment rationalism, emphasizing intense emotion and rebellion. Precursor to Romanticism. The term comes from a play by Klinger and describes turmoil. So Sturm und Drang, we went through this with college football as the playoffs were announced and certain teams were put in and other teams were left out. Now we're through the bowl season mostly, not entirely, but we're getting there. And many of these just stupid bowls have been played before a tiny handful of fans watching. I don't know what the TV ratings are for them on ESPN. They're all owned by ESPN except for one. Fox owns one. It's like the Sun Bowl. And it's the weirdest thing because you're thinking to yourself, all right, I'm seeing a promo from Fox about the Sun Bowl. Why do they have that? Why don't they get out entirely? Why would one bowl still not be under the ESPN, ABC, Disney umbrella? I don't know. But the bowls are as irrelevant as ever, more so than ever. There's too many of them, but we've had this for a while now. And people are complaining more and more, and they're saying this whole thing's going to collapse, and why even play the bowls? Players are opting out of bowls. Entire schools are opting out of bowls. But I'm here to tell you, you can't kill them. ESPN wants something on their television channels. They need those somethings. So they go ahead, and they pay the money to put them on. Kirk Herbstreit in his podcast with Joey Galloway, I know, Kirk also does a podcast as if he's not on enough things. And he said he once, in a production meeting, asked ESPN, his bosses there, management, hey, is it possible there's too many bowls? And Herbstreit said that went over like a fart in an elevator. The first comment, though, was, yeah, it's like when they said, is there too many dogs on the set of College Game Day? Yeah, of course there's too many bowls. Of course they're irrelevant. But you can't kill them. Television wants them, and television's going to get them. But we went through all this, and now you're seeing, by the way, college programs, college football programs. North Texas, which had their best year ever, almost snuck into the college football playoff. They lost everybody. They're wiped out. Missouri, meanwhile. No, not Missouri. It's Iowa State. Iowa State is down to 17 players after everybody hit the portal. And now college basketball is at the forefront of this crisis because college programs are signing pro players from Europe, and they're even dabbling with the edges of, we might try to sign this guy who has played in the NBA on a two-way contract. Hasn't happened yet, but we're right at the doorstep to it. So here was John Calipari pretty much going off on it yesterday. It's a 7-minute rant. It is almost perfect. I say almost, but it's not because of one thing he said. And he pretty much says, yeah, this is completely nuts, totally unsustainable, against everything the sport should be about, and nobody can do anything about it. Here's the last 4 minutes I'm going to give you of Calipari and his rant.
You ready? Mid-season. Unless you're in the school. This is an easy roll. We can do this, NCAA. Don't tell me about lawsuits. If you join a program at mid-season, you cannot play that season. If you're in school and have to get yourself eligible, that's okay. You can play the second term without playing the first. What? So now, let me ask you this. What does that do for the kids in the program that you're bringing kids in at midseason when it was their opportunity? I mean, I just don't get any of this. And again, Tommy, Mark Few, myself, we got my son, their sons are in this. I just want to help it before I'm out for my kid. I'm very selfish. But it's for that. But this stuff here, I just gave you what we could do. I'm going to give you one other. The collectives on our campuses, whether you're doing it through your media people, whatever, cannot be involved in recruiting in any way or transfers. But if a kid's on your campus for a year, give them what you want to stay. So we'll get more kids staying. How about this? It'll be great for them academically. They'll probably make more money, but they'll be academic. We're not going to have kids leaving after transferring four times. What's the percentage of kids that make the NBA? Unless you play for me, what would be the percentage? Like it's like 1% or less? That means 99% of the college players that are getting money, it's fugazi. Fugazi. Because they're getting 400, 500, 800, a million, and they're not pros. So now they have to go get a job after four stops. No college degree. No loyalty from the state or the program or anybody. You were a mercenary. Okay, now you got to go get a job. I don't care what a kid makes. It doesn't. But I do care what we're doing to young people. If all these kids could make $4 million, I don't care. But what we're doing by letting them have transfer at will. Transfer once. Coach leaves. You can go twice without penalty. But other than that, you got to sit out. Because now you get 3 years at one school. You're going to get a college degree. You can't be 30. You got 5 years. Clock is ticking. If you go pro, I don't care what country you're from. You leave your name in. You cannot play college basketball. If you transfer mid-season, can't play. You got to sit out. How about we just do that stuff? We can do it without having Congress and the Senate getting 60 votes. We can do that.
Yeah, maybe, but probably not. The only part of this whole rant from Calipari that I do not agree with, and I think he's being facile in his arguments, facile meaning to be, I got the definition here for you. By the way, I'm terrible at math. We know this. I've talked about this. I'm excellent at words. I come up with words, and I often then look them up to go, am I using this word correctly? Because facile came to mind as I listened to Calipari's argument of, I don't want to hear it about lawsuits. I'm like, well, that's a very facile argument. And then it dawned on me, do I even know what that word means? Here's your definition. Appearing neat and comprehensive only by ignoring the true complexities of an issue, a.k.a. superficial. Ding! Nailed it. Don't make me tap the sign. That's a meme from The Simpsons. Bus driver, don't make me tap the sign. You idiots, you're not remembering the most important thing. The reason that Calipari ranting about, I don't care about lawsuits. The problem is lawsuits are A, real, B, expensive, and C, the NCAA doesn't win any of them anymore. They've tried to limit the portal and say you get one transfer, and that has been deemed to be antitrust. And so they've lost and lost and lost. Why would they keep trying to enforce anything? Now, there is an alt theory that the NCAA is actively hoping to collapse the revenue sports in complete chaos so that they have Congress come in and pass legislation giving them antitrust authority so they can then start to restore order and semblance piece by piece. It's not the craziest theory I've heard. If it is their active strategy, I don't think it'll work, but it's interesting to think about. Major League Baseball is the only pro sports league that has a unique, broad antitrust exemption. The NBA and NFL have comparable, broad, but not unlimited antitrust, which is necessary because you've got a pro league that wants to have competitive balance. It wants to have order of in terms of who comes into the league and how those players, the talent gets distributed. And so by that very nature, you must collude on certain rules and agree on certain things. Again, where this is all headed is for a collective bargaining agreement and an entry draft in college sports. But then how do you meld that with academics, admissions, and the ability of kids to say, I don't want to be a Gamecock. I don't want to be a Spartan, and choose where they want to go instead of being drafted into being a Boilermaker or something like that. Ooh. A Boilermaker. Oh, I'm going to hear from my Boilermaker friends on that one. So it's a complete mess. And Fugazi, by the way, means not real. That's Calipari's Italian coming out. Not genuine, bogus, or false. Fugazi. He also makes a great point, and I don't care so much about it, that they're going to set these kids up for massive financial disappointment after four short years. These kids are going to go portal to portal to portal, scooping up $250 here, $350 there, $150 there. Nice haul, right? Close to $1 million. You're not set for life. First of all, your agent, these NIL agents are taking massive cuts, 10, 15, 20% more sometimes. And then, of course, taxes and, you know, hangers-on that want to grab at your money. You're then dumped out into the world, maybe with a degree, maybe not. And like Calipari said, well, get a job. Get a job, job, get a job. What, actually, is that a song? Sha-na-na-na, what is that song? Hold on. Get a job song. Ah, the Silhouettes. There you go. 1957. I believe my dad used to hum this to me as a kid growing up or as a teenager. Get a job, sha-na-na-na, sha-na-na. So, yes, and Calipari in a different soundbite, I don't know where it went in this 7-minute rant, said these, you know, athletes are going to get out of school, maybe with a degree, maybe not, and they're going to be told, well, you got to get a job now. Life begins now for you. That 750 grand you were able to extract from that little orgy spree of hopping from here to there, good for you, but you're not set for life. And yeah, the job you're going to get is maybe $55,000 a year. That's it? Calipari had a great rant on this. He's like, that's it? I got to show up for this? Yes, every day. And you must work at times with unpleasant, unreasonable people that are your coworkers. You must navigate that minefield of the modern workplace and do it for, at least 25, 30 years, if you're lucky. Save some money up so you can maybe retire someday. But yeah, the whole thing, if I can make one analogy about college sports, maybe you'll like it, maybe not. But I've always said that not only did the student athletes get the best deal ever under the old draconian system, which was college scholarship, free room and board, and some stipend money to spend in the later years before this all fell apart. They were getting like $5,000 a semester. Not bad, right? Pay for some plane tickets to go home when you want to, or bring mom and dad to come see a game. That system was the greatest system ever because they're getting something that is valued at rack rate $55,000, $65,000, $75,000 a year, a major college tuition. And what a deal that was. And there was no shortage of kids who wanted to take advantage of that. And you could say, well, but look at how much money now college sports makes by way of their television contracts. Well, okay, but they always made money, just not as much. They started making a ton of money because of TV. They always filled the stadiums and they always made money on the actual coming to the games and selling popcorn and tickets and whatnot. The television money exploded. And so the argument of, well, people are getting rich. These adults are getting rich on the backs of the poor kids is a very facile argument as well. It's very simplified. It's not really necessarily accurate. College coaching salaries did shoot straight up because the coaches that could help you win under the old system meant millions of dollars and added admissions to the university and everything else. They got paid more. Administrators got paid more. They added more administrators for sure. But where did the rest of the explosion money go? It went towards building facilities, weight rooms, workout centers, lazy rivers, additions to good old Memorial Stadium, wherever yours was. And it also went to pay for the women's sports and the Olympic sports that made negative $0.00. And so that's where the money went. But I always like to ask, so at what point did there become too much money in college sports where the players had to be paid? Because it's a gradual slope up of how television money kept getting larger and larger. You weren't arguing for this in the 1980s when sports were on television, but usually once a week on a Saturday afternoon with Billy Packer calling the games. Was it too much money then, or when did that happen exactly? The analogy I'd make, though, is that what is college sports? College sports is a steakhouse. Now, who here has had a fine steak at a nice steakhouse? Raise your hand. Okay, me too. I love steak. It's cow. I've had steaks at home, especially when I buy the best cut available at the local grocer, and I put on some of that Montreal steak seasoning, and I put it in a nice pan, and I sear it up good with some butter, and then put it in the oven to finish, cook it just right. I'll eat that thing going, that's as good as any steakhouse I've been. You know why? Because it basically is. That even the steakhouses that source the best of the best of the best and the dry age stuff, your palate, my palate, it's not enough to distinguish it. So if a steakhouse, if you say, well, the players need to get paid, they're the ones who are making all this money for the colleges. It's not the steak that's making the money for the steakhouses. If a steakhouse served its steak outside on a card table, freshly cooked, and placed into a cardboard box for the person to go eat, would they sell a lot of steak? No. Well, the steak is really good, though. The steak is necessary, but the product is the experience. It's going into the restaurant. It's the vibe and the feel that you get when you go to Manny's in Minneapolis or Burns Steakhouse in Indy. Or is that in Tampa? Burns is in Tampa. Something else is in Indy. The famous ones, you get it. But that's what you're selling. You're selling everything else. You're selling the service, the vibe, the people who are in there, the sides, and everything else. Because if you just sold the cow, the athletes, on the side of the sidewalk, you wouldn't make any money because it's all the same. The steak is a necessary thing. It's not the crucial thing. It's not the essential thing. And that's the way athletes have always been in college. They're amateurs. They're needed. But you get into college sports because of the tradition, the rivalries, the colors, the logos, the uniforms, the heroes, the tales of conquests and agonies and defeats of yore, and the community of coming together in a tailgate on Saturday afternoon. That's the product. The players, necessary, not important, and 99% of them, irrelevant. They come, they go, and they're on their way in life. Hopefully they studied a little bit and they can go make a living after that in some field, which many of them do. A lot of them do. That's college sports. So the notion of, oh, we've got to pay more for steak. We must pay for the steak over and over and over again. We gotta pay for it four times in the span of 4 years instead of just getting it at a decent price. That's what college sports now is. You're having to repurchase your steak at ever-increasing costs when it really doesn't matter because it's not the product. I also think that there should only be one foreign-born player on any college team. Does that sound jingoistic or too exclusionary? Maybe. I don't care, though. I think college athletics ought to be a privilege and a right for Americans. Yeah, sure, get one guy from Slobotnia, whatever. Not three or four or five, and don't drop them in the middle of the season. That's absurd. You get one. This thing is for us. We can close the door on that. And if you say, well, but there's good players that are coming from Serbia and whatnot, don't care. Go play in a Serbian pro league at 18. Trust me, the NBA scouts will find you and they'll draft you. They've been doing that now for years. But the college experience, the college sports experience should be for fucking Americans. Am I yelling? Am I cussing right now? Anyway, that's my comprehensive take on this. Sure, they should have no portal. You should have to sit out a year if you transfer. I don't care if the coach leaves. Is it unfair? Yeah, life's unfair. You committed to the school. Don't commit to a school or a coach just because of the coach. Do it for larger reasons so that if the coach leaves, then you say, okay, well, there's a new coach. He may not like me as much as the guy who recruited me, but it's going to be my job to persevere and try to, you know, get going with this new guy. And if it really isn't going to work, then I can transfer. It only cost me 1 year of my life, and I will do that, and I'll pay the price. It teaches fortitude and sticking with something and working with new people who you don't know and may be uncomfortable with. What a great life skill that is. That's what should be taught to the young college athletes. Yeah, sucks. This guy left. Because you know what? Your boss at work, he going to get fired. He going to take another job. Corporate's going to put some other stooge in there to run things. And if you like the job you do, but aren't sure about the new manager coming in, you're going to have to figure it out. Anyway, it's flying apart like Skylab returning to Earth right now. It's kind of comical. It's sad. But then again, I've already preloaded much of my sadness about where things have gone with college athletics, both in college football and in basketball. So I'm through many of the stages of the Kubler-Ross grief scale. So I'm further down the road on this. Now I just kind of watch it like, yeah, well, look at that, huh? You're going to sign an NBA player in January. Awesome. Who could have seen this coming? Oh, wait a minute. I saw it coming. So did many other smart people. And the ones who should have seen it coming or maybe did see it coming but didn't give a shit anyway because they were making too much money and wanted to just keep their status as being on the right side of the issue. I don't want to name names, Jay Billis, but those guys, well, yeah, they saw it coming too. They knew it was coming. They didn't fucking care though because life was too good for them. End of rant.
We might be in the final quarter of the football season, but that doesn't mean winning season is over. Oh no. With MyBookie and its cash out system, you are in control of how you bet and how you win for the rest of the season. Season win totals, parlays, points totals. If you're on the right side, you can get out while the getting is good. Cash out. Use the funds on other bets, or just let it ride for the chance at a bigger payday. Any way you slice it, you are in control. To get started, go to mybookie.ag now. That's mybookie.ag. Register for an account for free. When you're ready, make your first deposit. And remember to use promo code ZABE. That's Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. And grab a welcome bonus on the house. That's promo code ZABE to claim your deposit bonus. The season is running out, but winning season has just begun. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere at mybookie.ag.
Did you know that your calendar age does not always match how old your body truly is? Your biological age and the age of your cells and organs is the number one predictor of your risk for serious diseases. That's why I ordered the True Age test from True Diagnostic. With just a simple at-home finger prick, you can uncover your true biological age and get personalized insights. No doctor visits, no labs. Look, I'll be honest. When I learned that if your biological age is just 5 years older than your actual age, your disease risk can jump 30 to 50%.
I got a little bit nervous. I mean, I'm the guy who thinks ketchup counts as a vegetable. But up to 90% of biological aging is driven by lifestyle. The way we eat, move, sleep, and manage stress has a massive impact on how fast our bodies age. True Diagnostic gives you a personalized report with science-backed steps to actually slow down aging. I'm kind of dreading what my results might say, but I am curious. Maybe this will finally be the wake-up call that gets me and you back on track. The test is super easy. Send in your sample using the prepaid mailer, and in 2 to 3 weeks, you get your detailed report. If you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to TrueDiagnostic.com and use my code ZABE to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. TrueDiagnostic.com, promo code ZABE at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit LGUSA.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
The catch, the greatest catch that wasn't. I believe we have seen now the greatest catch that was ruled not a catch in the history of the NFL. Late Monday night, Atlanta Falcons holding on desperately against the LA Rams. Rams were down big at half, mounted a furious comeback. The Rams not only looking good with those cherry red throwback helmets. God, that red pops. So good. They look good with Kirk running things, which is now going to lead to some interesting conversations in Atlanta. They've got a lot of young, dynamic players, explosive players. And, of course, they got the cheat code that is Bijan Robinson going 93 yards for a touchdown after a sensational interception. It was electric at Mercedes-Benz last night. But Rams are fighting furiously to get in position for a last-ditch field goal. And then this happened. Puka Nacua on a, I counted it, a 43-yard screaming out from Matthew Stafford. One-hand catches, double toe drags with Terrell hanging all over him, and makes the catch seemingly.
Expect to see in this situation. They got to go to the sideline now. It's Nacua. He grabbed it. Was it a catch? The officials are getting together to talk. Let's take a look. They have not ruled whether it's a catch or not.
I mean, how do you even
ruling
get that?
The field is an incomplete pass. Brings up fourth down from the previous spot.
Well, I mean, what am I seeing that they don't? Because that looks like a catch.
I think this is a better look at it.
That's incredible. That's a one-handed, left-handed
catch. That's a
catch.
Both feet were in bounds. That's a catch.
He definitely gets both feet down as long as he maintained control of that ball through contact with the ground. That's a catch.
And A.J. Terrell, I mean, he had his hand in there. I'm not sure how Puka's even making this play, but that's a catch. That's amazing.
That's going to give the Rams a chance. Does the ball come out there?
Well, it came loose there at the end.
And that shot changes everything. On that shot, you can see the ball did come loose as he's going to the ground. This is an incomplete pass.
Unbelievable on multiple fronts that Nacua can make that catch. Left-handed, one-handed. A.J. Terrell hanging all over him. A screaming 43-yard out from Stafford. Double toe drag. But what's fascinating is that every replay, you're like, no, he caught that. Oh, my God, he caught that. And then the last angle showed Terrell was able to pull his arm off the ball for a split second, and it hovered in the air. But then he quickly recovered it and came down with the catch. The problem was, according to the rules, you must both get both feet down, have complete control and possession of the ball, maintain control of the ball, and then survive the ground. He did almost all of that. It's just the ball popped into the air for one split second. He quickly recontrolled it. Is that him, quote, losing control, or is that the defender literally pulling his arm off of it? I guess the answer is it's the same, right? It's a distinction without a difference. Incredible catch, though. I would have called it a catch. This is also why replay must die. Replay, although they got this right on the field, so it wasn't really replay, but if they had called it a catch on the field, they would have overturned it. Replay is the thief of joy. Replay is the thief of awesome. Replay is the, well, you know, technically, it's kind of, you lost the ball for a split second there when it came off. Fucking amazing catch. Also, I want to say this because some people have come at me on Twitter claiming I'm too relentlessly negative about one Al Michaels. That's because he's bad right now. I mean, he's worse than bad. He provides a negative enjoyment factor to the games. And he's well past his prime. So that's why I'm relentless about him until he retires. You know what? I'll stop bitching about Al Michaels when he finally retires. Then I'm done. My work will be done. I'll say my watch has ended here at Castle Black. Nerd! Sorry. Buck and Aikman are cooking right now. Hear this, people? This is positive reinforcement. Buck and Aikman. Yes, Mr. Good Jobs himself, who's cut down on the jobs and is clearly in his id gaff era. I don't give a fuck era. Troy Aikman. They're great. This run by Bijan Robinson is a play-by-play and color coordinator masterpiece. Take a listen.
Draft, and he's a promising player. Here's Robinson, right side. Nice cutback. He's gone. Can anybody catch him? Not tonight. McCreary chasing. Won't get there. Touchdown, Atlanta. 93 yards.
I mean, that just gave me chills. What great announcing. Buck is so good. Efficiency of words, proper inflection, knows when to pour it on. And Aikman, to his credit, because it wasn't so sure that Bijan would make it all the way. Aikman chiming in with just a simple, not tonight. Oh, that's good shit.
Here's Robinson, right side. Nice cutback. He's gone. Can anybody catch him? Not tonight. McCreary chasing. Won't get there. Touchdown, Atlanta. 93 yards.
Oh, so good right there. And, of course, on that play, Bijan was looking over his left shoulder as he's racing to the end zone. And I'm thinking, bro, use the Jumbotron. And the reason that he couldn't was at Mercedes, the Jumbotron is inside the circle of the sphincter of the roof of the building. So he had nowhere to look. And then McCreary catches the heel of his foot at like the 5-yard line. And somehow he was able to just, I don't know, sense that he was about to be dove at his feet and kicked his leg out to avoid it last second. Absolutely incredible stuff. Now to a grab bag of other items. Brandon Tierney, who was out at WFAN along with his former partner Sal Licata, has opened up about one of the challenges he faced during his time at The Fan, and it involved former program director Spike Eskin. Spike Eskin is the son of Howard Eskin in Philly. And on his new YouTube show, Tierney Unleashed, he talked about how Eskin wanted him and Licata to hit a strong statement and begin debate within the first 10 to 15 seconds of going on air. Tierney understood. He said he understood the reasoning behind it, that there is so many choices these days and people are so itchy with their trigger finger that if you don't do that, you're going to lose those people. The problem, as Tierney went on to say, is that he felt it wasn't genuine. It wasn't really organic, didn't show their personalities or their human side. And I agree with that entirely. Not every day will there be something you are totally fired up about that you want to come out and go, this is the reason so-and-so should be fired. And they're all the same tropes, by the way. So-and-so should be fired. This guy sucks as a quarterback. That draft pick's never going to be any good. And to come out in the first 15 seconds of a show and go, this is the debate, and then you start debating it, it all looks good on paper, in theory. Because, my God, we're competing with everyone out there, and people are really quick with their finger to change the channel. There's a fatal flaw to that thinking, though, and this is something many program directors don't consider. Who says people are waiting around for the start of the show? People listen to radio when they can, when they pop in the car. Some listen all day, sure, but if they're listening all day, they don't care if you hit some phony debate topic within the first 10 or 15 seconds, for God's sakes. Also, when you do that, when you say, okay, today we're going to debate how badly Aaron Glenn should be fired. Should he be tar and feathered? Should he be run out on a rail? Should he be publicly shamed? Should this be like a Squid Game type coaching execution? When you come out and say, all right, this is what we're doing. Here's our debate. Blah, blah, blah. No, he should. Yes, he didn't. It doesn't allow for anything organic. It allows for nothing exploratory. It doesn't allow you to kind of probe and wander and sift things out. And that's the kind of radio that I've always enjoyed. And I like doing it myself, where you get together with your co-host or co-hosts and you start to talk and you get into topics. You do have a loose idea. We want to talk about this today and we're going to get to it, but we're going to have a conversation. We're not going to worry about 10 or 15 seconds in hitting you with a first take style of debate that many listeners, because they're not dumb, might sniff out as being completely and totally inauthentic. Quarterbacks this week in the NFL are going to be interesting. I wish the Bengals would let Joe Flacco start for them because he would have the most perfect bookends of a season in NFL history. Joe Flacco opened the year as QB1 for the Browns, and he played against the Bengals week one. Week 18, he would have a chance to be QB1 and start for the Bengals and play against the Browns. Instead, Joe Burrow is playing for reasons that I don't fully understand, but good luck to him. I hope he doesn't get hurt again playing a meaningless Week 18 game. There could be a Clayton Tune versus Max Brosmer matchup between the Packers and the Vikings. Packers have not yet named as of Tuesday morning at 10:38 a.m. when I tape this. They're starting QB, but Tune would be the guy to go if they feel like Malik Willis is not worth risking injury-wise, and he's not, by the way. He should start Clayton. They should start Clayton too, and it doesn't matter. Remember, a year ago, for reasons that befuddled me and I screamed about, they had Christian Watson playing Week 18 against the Bears, and he blew out his ACL. Bom, bom, bom. Oh, what good was that? LaFleur's like, we got to win a game. We got to come into the playoffs on a positive note. Of course, there might be that feeling again this year because they've lost four straight, but it doesn't matter. If the game doesn't matter, treat it like it does not matter. You're not going to carry anything over from this meaningless game into the first playoff game as a wild card on the road at either Chicago or Philly. So, yes, you should start whoever you can start besides the guys that matter, which are Jordan Love and Malik Willis. It's been a hell of a quarterback year overall, not just the Joe Flacco thing. You had 44-year-old Philip Rivers, one of the more incredible stories we've seen in a long time. The New York teams, the Jets and the Giants, split the Pittsburgh castoffs. Both guys had been non-factors in Pittsburgh, in Russell Wilson to Justin Fields. Neither one worked. Drake May exploded this year. Tua, Kyler, and JD5 all got shut down with it weeks left in the season. Bryce Young resurrected himself. Surprise. Tyler Shuck is pretty good as a rookie. He's the best rookie out there, maybe, in the class. He's 5-3 and has got a four-game win streak. And go look at his numbers. I've been sleeping on Tyler Shuck, and I, too, thought he was straight ass. He's 26 years old, though. Maybe they got something in Tyler Shuck. Aaron Rodgers has been not awful this year, but as we played for you yesterday, the kid in his mom's basement breaking down the film of, what are you doing, buddy? Why are you throwing these passes? This is losing football. Rodgers maybe had his worst game yet as a Pittsburgh Steeler. Josh Johnson is still around and got several starts for the Commanders. People still hate Jalen Hurts in Philadelphia, especially Eagle fans, even though he won a Super Bowl for them less than a year ago. Dak Prescott had an amazing year, and all the Dak haters out there went very quiet, but because the Cowboys' defense was so bad, nobody's really talking about the year that Dak had. It was a very interesting year
for a TV show about quarterbacks, as I like to call the NFL, and I think this winter is going to be even more interesting. Moving on. A couple other things here, real quick. Technology is getting crazy. I saw some list that had the most likely jobs to be replaced by AI. And number seven on the list was sports broadcasters / DJs. And I get it. Right now, you could scrape all the episodes, or you wouldn't even need all of them, just scrape a representative sample of episodes of this podcast and get the tonality, the tempo, the style of my voice, and then run that through an AI generator that scans the headlines and the stories in sports, and then have it spit out a podcast that I don't even create. That, and it would sound a lot like me. It would sound very, very close. It would lack, however, my discerning eye to be able to pick what stories I'd like to riff on more than others, that sort of art of play calling, if you will. And I think you would still fall short of being genuine enough for people to want. And if it ever got to that point, I think many of us would say, well, I want to get the content I want from the producer, the content creator I want, the personality that I want, that I like, but I want to make sure I'm getting it in a way that is not AI. I want to make sure that it's real. And there will be ways, I think, to manually defeat AI to be able to say, well, this is the reason this is real. I don't know what stunt you'd have to do to pull it or what delivery system would be required or proof that this is not AI. But there's going to be ways to do it. People, I believe, will always want something that's genuine. Of course, the toys for kids are getting crazier and crazier. There's a Christmas gift that was hot this year called Sticker Box. What's Sticker Box? You press a button. If you're a kid, you describe something into this little box with a little LED panel on it, and AI generates the image and prints it on a sticker. Hold on a second. Get that highlight out of here. How many tabs are up right now? Only about 20, something like that. Sticker Box. Here you go. Ready? This looks awesome, but it's also dystopian in its own way.
A butterfly on top of a Christmas tree.
Why is it taking so long for this AI to print this out? It's the shittiest AI box I've ever seen. Somebody pointed out, kids are supposed to be drawing these things, not speaking them into an AI toy box. I already see the horror movie, though, based on a toy like this. Little girl, late at night, can't sleep, sneaks out of her room, goes down into the living room, presses the button, starts to play with her little sticker box, and the sticker box says, "Hi there, Sophia. Would you like to play a game?" Chevy Chase is a legendary dick. He knows this, and he's tired of all the stories that have come out about just what a miserable human being he is. So is his family, apparently, unhappy about the way Chevy's life and career is being written. And because he's getting older quickly, he's had a number of health issues, he's apparently trying to change or bend that narrative. So what did he do? He partnered with a woman named Marina Zenovich for a documentary. The problem is he gave up full control of the end product. So according to this Variety story, the Zenovich documentary, "I'm Chevy Chase and You're Not," is not your average celebrity documentary. It airs on January 1st. And from the outset, it's clear the 82-year-old comedian had zero editorial control. A minute into the doc, Zenovich can be heard off camera saying to Chase, I'm just trying to figure you out. Chase's response, no shit, it's not going to be easy for you. Zenovich says, why is it not going to be easy? Chase, you're not bright enough. How's that? Then the comedian grins. Zenovich said she was taken aback by Chase's response, which she was also relieved at because she said, well, I was worried going into the first interview, like, hey, how do I present it to him that, you know, everyone thinks you're an asshole, Chevy. I thought if I did that, he'd throw me out of his house and the whole thing would collapse. So the minute he said that to me, I had a way in. Anyhow, I think it's going to be a fascinating thing. How can a guy with that much success, money, and to be so loved for the silly roles he's played in so many movies be so torn apart and miserable inside and then project that outwards to anyone in his orbit? It's a fascinating sort of wrinkle in the human condition. Speaking of miserable, can somebody tell Draymond Green to shut the fuck up? Here's Draymond Green talking about playing bouncy ball on Christmas Day for millions and millions of dollars.
About how great playing on Christmas Day is, how much of an honor it is. And like, yes, it is an honor to be considered one of the draws, you know, the great draws that is in the NBA. You know, when I say draws, I mean media attention, eyeballs. People wanting to see, people being interested in the particular team is great. To play on a day where everybody's watching, it's incredible. All of those things are great, but two things can be true at once. Playing on Christmas Day also fucking sucks. And the reason it sucks is, number one, what I just said, it can affect your mood. Number two, we are human beings, and just like everyone else, enjoy Christmas Day with their families. That kind of gets messed up for us in their homes or on a vacation with their families making memories. We don't get that opportunity. So I hate when people are like, oh, man, it's an honor to play on Christmas Day. People should shut up. Like, no, you should shut up. Because whether you played on Christmas Day or not, I don't really care of the perspective. Whether it's the perspective of someone that played on Christmas Day or someone that has never come close to playing on Christmas Day or an NBA game for that matter. My stance on it is the same. Playing on Christmas Day is great. It's fun. You know, you get.
Is it great or does it suck? I've heard both.
You miss family time. Yeah. And so for all of those that like, you should be honored, like honored to miss.
You got half of Christmas Day. The game itself, unless you're traveling, if it's a home game, you still got half the day. And there are people in this country who work shitty jobs on Christmas and don't get all day with their families. And there are men and women fighting for this country who have missed multiple Christmases over the years. A proper league and a proper commissioner would swoop in, find the shit out of Draymond Green, and then tell the Warriors, you're not on Christmas anymore. I don't care what it does to our ratings. You're not going to appear because you can't control your own players, and impart to them the message of, hey, we're going to play a bouncy ball game. You're going to get paid millions of dollars, and you're going to go home and still have half the day to be with your family for Christmas. Or you can have Christmas the next day or the day before. Every day is Christmas if you're an NBA player. Draymond Green, the relationship, I think, between fans and players in the NBA is irretrievably broken for the most part. Only the really hardcore basketball heads still like the league. The rest of us will watch it because of the high level of athleticism, but we'll watch it only when we know the stakes matter, playoffs, and the actual participants are trying, you know, playoffs. And then let's end on this, since it is Christmas Eve, and I don't know what your plans are. I'm going to be home for Christmas Eve. Did I say Christmas Eve? New Year's Eve. It's New Year's Eve. I don't know what your plans are. I'm going to be home because my daughter, Catherine, loves to watch the ball come down. It's an annual tradition with her, and she's 26 years old now, and we keep doing it every year. As you know, Catherine's on the autism spectrum, but she loves this holiday. She's talking about getting her little confetti poppers and everything in line for the big ball drop, and so it's a nice thing that I do. I would go out, though, even though my instincts as a 57-year-old used to the comforts of home and my hoodie, sweatshirt, and pajamas lifestyle would otherwise scream, I don't want to go out. I would go out because I'm at the boomerang point where I've been home too long and I've done this too long that I do want to get out and talk to some strange people and just mix and mingle and experience something, which I have done on New Year's Eves of many, many, many years ago. And I do remember them, but it's been a while ago. The great Nate Bargatze has this regarding the way you get as you get older when it comes to going out. Nate is so good in both his comedic instincts, perspective, writing, and delivery. It's awesome.
I miss being young. Your 20s are great. You're down for whatever. Your friends call you. They're like, do you want to go? You're like, I'll go. You don't even know where you're going. You're like, I'll move, dude. I'll set my apartment on fire. What do you want to do? Your 30s come, and you're like, where are we going? How late are they open? Is it loud? I am going to drive separate. Your 40s, I'm not going. I'm mad that you thought I would go. I miss being young.
Oh, my God. That is classic. Whether you're going out or staying in, Happy New Year. Thank you for being with me in 2025. I hope you continue the journey into 2026 and beyond. We've got some amazing things, I think, coming up in this year. Be safe out there, as always, and thanks for listening. Don't know about the production schedule for the rest of this week. It's tricky. New Year's Day is three of the four college football playoff games. I'd like to be able to give you some react and thoughts about that, but that would necessitate a late Friday podcast because I'm on the air on JFK from 10 to 2 on Friday, so there really won't be proper time to produce that. I would normally do a You Are Looking Live with Scott and Solly, but let's be honest, there's only three games that mean a damn thing. So why worry about grinding on the rest of the games when they don't really matter? Plus, you've got the awkward situation where the Carolina Panthers and Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Saturday does not decide the division. The decision will get decided whenever the Falcons do what they do against the Saints on Sunday, because if the Falcons win, then the Panthers are your NFC South winners no matter what. So that's, I think, a scheduling screw-up by the league in which they didn't put this game on Sunday. They should have had the Falcons play the game on Saturday so we at least know, hey, has this game already defaulted to being the Panthers, or has the division defaulted to being the Panthers? All right, that's enough for me. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great New Year's Eve, and we will see you in 26. See what I did? Oh, God, he's that guy. Happy New Year, folks. We might be in the final quarter of the football season, but that doesn't mean winning season is over. Oh no. With MyBookie and its cash out system, you are in control of how you bet and how you win for the rest of the season. Season win totals, parlays, points totals. If you're on the right side, you can get out while the getting is good. Cash out. Use the funds on other bets, or just let it ride for the chance at a bigger payday. Any way you slice it, you are in control. To get started, go to mybookie.ag now. That's mybookie.ag. Register for an account for free. When you're ready, make your first deposit. And remember to use promo code ZABE. That's Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. And grab a welcome bonus on the house. That's promo code ZABE to claim your deposit bonus. The season is running out, but winning season has just begun. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere at mybookie.ag.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Graham laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Graham keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit LGUSA.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.